Yo, what's good, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Isaiah K Podcast. Shouts out to everyone that is listening. Greatly appreciate it. So I haven't recorded a pod in about a week or so. I think it's been a little over a week. So I did my SEC Big Ten Power Rankings heading into 2024. So you guys can go check that out. College football content. I'm trying to dibble and dabble and a little into everything. None of you guys will feel like you're left behind. No, a lot of you guys enjoy the college football content. I do as well. So I do that for you guys. But this episode, I'm gonna mix it up a little bit. There's gonna be some college basketball content and some NBA content. So stick around for that. I will also have a guest come on. I'm having a guest come on this episode. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. So yeah, thank you guys for tuning in. Greatly appreciate it. Actually, I might break this episode down into two parts. So part one might be college basketball talk, and then part two might actually just be NBA talk. So I think I'm gonna divvy it up like that and break it down like that. So greatly appreciate all of you guys that's listening, all you guys that have gone on to Spotify or Apple and followed the podcast, rated the podcast. I see the ratings are going up. So I greatly appreciate that from everyone that is doing that and participating, sharing the pod, continue to share the pod with a friend, with a foe. Greatly appreciate it. But let's dive into this episode. Let's get it. So as I told you guys today, I was going to have a listener. I haven't recorded an episode in about a week or so. I think it's been a little over a week. My previous episode, as I told you guys earlier, go check it out. It's basically a rankings. I did like my own rankings with my own criteria of the new look SEC and the new look Big Ten. So go check that out. It's for 2024. Tap into that. But while you're here, for all my basketball lovers, I know it feels like I have kind of put you guys near the wayside. I've kind of just putting you guys second fiddle. But yes, it is basketball time. March is right around the corner. By the time you hear this video or this podcast, it will be March. So yes, it's playoff basketball time. It's March Madness and so forth. So I figured since, you know, I haven't had much guests come on since the year has started. I bring on a really good basketball of mine, one of my favorite basketball minds that I know. I will say a familiar voice. I think he's been on the pod once or twice. I could be mistaken, but I for sure know he's been on the pod at least once. So let me introduce my guy, Ira Swan Don. Swanson, he's from Rooted in Sports podcast. Hope you guys, enjoy his content, enjoy him. I know he's going to be really fully insightful for the topics that we have at hand, but how you doing, Ira?
I'm all good, man. Once again, to be on this platform with you, man, it's always a pleasure, man. Absolutely. Love what you're doing.
Yeah.
Love the content, man. And it's just a pleasure, man. And I'm excited about this, man. I'm excited to talk a little hoops with you.
Thank you for coming on, sharing your time. Like I said, I'm not going to admit to it, but some of my basketball fans may seem like I have put them to the wayside and put them second fiddle because we've been so heavy football, heavy NFL, heavy college football. But I think it's only right after the All-Star break and so forth. Why not come on and give you guys some great basketball content? So, Ira, a lot going on in the world of hoops, right? We're going to get to, you know, I know a lot of people like, we got to talk college basketball. We're going to get to college basketball. We're going to get to some NBA talk too as well. And we're going to actually start in college basketball. And the first thing I want to talk about, Ira, is LeBron James' recent comments on his son Bronny's, I would say, performance. The latest mock draft had came out earlier this week, And it didn't even have Bronny projected to get drafted in this year's draft. It has him in the second round. I think it was pick 39 in the second round of the 2025 NBA draft. That then led to LeBron James coming out on Twitter, basically saying, I'm paraphrasing, but he basically like, hey, can we all respect our privacy? Me and my family's privacy and so forth. He's going to put the work in, blase. And then after that, he kind of goes into like a motivational speech, I would say, to all the kids. And he's like, hey, to all the kids. No,
just talking about none of that
matters. Right, none of that matters. Continue to grind. And hey, people, let's talk real basketball. So that was a paraphrase, and he did that. Those are two tweets. He deleted them. I don't know why people delete them. I don't know why people delete them these days. Once you tweet it, it's up there forever, whatever. But just give me your thoughts on LeBron's comments, because it's been heavily talked about, and with Bronny, Bronny's been talked about a lot and so forth. So just give me your thoughts on that.
So let me preference what I'm about to say by saying that I am a father myself, and I pray that one day I'm in the situation where, you know, one of my children are playing a sport in college and, you know, just chasing after their dreams, and I can be that dad to, you know, step in and defend them. With that being said, so initially, you know, I really kind of sided with LeBron here. I thought that, and I think from what I've seen, it was put out by a specific reporter just basically saying, you know, hey, Bronny James is not included in the latest mock draft for the 2024 NBA draft. And I thought to myself, I can't recall a time where it was big news or it had to be announced that a certain player was no longer included or no longer being mocked to be drafted in a certain draft or whatever. And so for me, I felt like, you know, obviously it was clickbait because that is LeBron James' son.
Right.
And he knew, A, that it would get the views, get the clicks, get the audience that he desired. And B, I think he also had to have known that it was going to draw the ire and the criticism of LeBron James haters or Bronny haters or those who already said, you know, oh, he only got a scholarship at USC because he's LeBron James's son. And those were my thoughts initially. And also, let me, and I'm gonna just throw this out there as well.
Go ahead, rock out.
Anyone who has watched Bronny play in high school, if you watched him leading up, if you truly watched him, he should have never been considered just this high-end, five-star, one-and-done type of player. He was always a developmental prospect. Okay. Now, those are my initial thoughts, but I have to say this. I was actually listening to, you know, ESPN, and I was listening to Stephen A. Smith, and he brought up a really valid point. LeBron James is the same guy who has made it more than known quite openly that he desires and almost expects to play in the league with his son, which in turn, I don't know if he realizes this or not, but it's going to draw those eyes and that attention to his son. As great as he is, people are going to want to see, hey, well, who is this kid he's talking about? And can he possibly live up to, you know, or get out of his father's shadow, so to speak. So when I think about that, I think that the father in me is like, you know what, hey, step in, LeBron, you know what I'm saying, guard your son, publicly encourage your son. But then on the flip side, it is like, well, you know, to whom much is given, much is required, you know, and you can't necessarily, when you say things like, hey, I expect to play in the league with my son, when you say things like, you know, I know my son is better than some of these bums that I'm seeing out here. Well, you know, you're going to garner some criticism that comes with that as well. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, you know, his son has to be prepared and mentally tough enough to deal with that as well. So, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of a catch-22. I can't say that I disagree with LeBron and his comments, but I also think that he has to prepare his son for this, you know, especially being LeBron James' son, a player whom many believe is the greatest of all time in the basketball realm.
I think these latest comments that LeBron has made, and for those who want to, I kind of gave a paraphrase, but I have one of the tweets pulled up where he basically, I'm going to read it verbatim. Can y'all please just let the kid be a kid and we enjoy college basketball? The work and results will ultimately do the talking, no matter what he decides to do. If y'all don't know, he doesn't care what a mock draft says. He just works. Earned, never given. And then on the second tweet, as I told you guys, as I explained, he went, you know, gave like a motivational speak to all the kids out there, whatever. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, he's writing everything he's saying. You know, his son does just have to keep his head down and keep grinding. But once again, for anyone who, A, has actually watched his son, and B, watches college basketball, or even, you know, watches USC,
mm-hmm.
He's behind two high-level guards. Like they have there was another freshman came in, Isaiah Collier, who was a five-star recruit, who was who was ranked, you know, top five, top 10 coming out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other kid, Boogie Ellis. So, I mean, he's behind two high-level guards, you know what I'm saying? And it's going to be an adjustment for him, and that's okay. Like, you know, we do got to cut him a little grace, you know what I'm saying? But I think anyone who has watched him or who does watch him, who watched him in high school, there's no way you watched him and thought or assumed that he was going to get to the next level and just be a god, you know?
Yeah. I'm going to say this, and these comments are not directed towards Bronny James, because I am one of those people who I kind of essentially followed his high school career and so forth, and I knew what I was getting in. I knew what kind of player he was, right? I knew he wasn't just some one-and-done lottery pick, you know, a year after high school. I knew that was not him as a player, as a basketball player. I think with LeBron James, with his tweets, what he's been publicly, just very publicly and outwardly, what he's saying about Bronny James is really highly hypocritical. And I have a big problem with it, because I think too often LeBron James comes out, either says certain things or does certain things, and then when someone tries to react, and for in this instance, LeBron, as you said, has been on note numerous. It's the worst kept secret on planet Earth. I've seen interviews where they have conducted interviews between him and Savannah, and they ask both parents, "Hey, what do you want for Bronny's future?" And Savannah comes out and says, "I just want my son to be healthy and happy in whatever he does." LeBron James, I want him in the league with me. I want him in the league with me. Okay. There's been also other tweets where I can pull up and say, "Hey, Bronny said, LeBron James said this." Man, Bronny definitely better than some of these cats I've been watching on League Pass today.
Yep.
Excuse my French, but he says, "Shit, lightweight. Hilarious." And then a reporter asked him, while the Lakers were struggling throughout the season this year, a reporter asked him, "Hey, what do you think about the Lakers' struggles?" And he was like, "Bronny can come play for us right now." And these type of comments, first, I think are highly kind of like somewhat disrespectful to his teammates and other players, and other players around the league, it's like, okay, like, like, I don't know if that whole comment, like, Bronny could play on the Lakers right now, I don't know if that was, kind of like fuel. I don't know if that was hyperbole. I don't know if that was like fuel, trying to fuel up his teammates, but it was very, very disrespectful. If I was a Laker player and you talking about you and a reporter asks you about our struggles as a basketball team, and you come out and talk about your damn son and say he's better than us and he could play on this team right now, what the hell?
Speaking about a kid who is struggling to get minutes on his collegiate team.
And mind you, his collegiate team, we both watch college basketball. Mind you, his collegiate team, we ain't talking like the 92. This ain't the 92 Duke Blue Devils. They're 11th in the Pac-12. Exactly. They're not a good basketball team. This is not a good basketball team. We are not talking about a stacked Kentucky team with NBA guards everywhere. No, 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 no. This is a USC team. Granted, Isaiah Collier, who I really, really like. I like him. I knew he was going to be playing over Bronny. Boogie Ellis. I knew Boogie Ellis. He's a returning guy. So, like, I think he was, like, all conference or something like that. He's really good. Like, these are two high-end guards that's going to probably get drafted this summer in the draft. Yeah.
Collier for sure.
Yes. So I think the comments from LeBron is very hypocritical. And as to your point, as you've been pointing out, everybody knows that Bronny James went to Sierra Canyon. And the league that they play in is one of the toughest, not only in the state of California, but in the country. It's a really highly competitive league. His senior year, ladies and gentlemen, his senior year, he probably wasn't even he wasn't one of the 10 best players in his league. Like, I'm blanking, and please forgive me, Californian. For all my people that are like from California, that may have a little bit more knowledge on me about this particular school, but if I'm not mistaken, his senior year, they played this Catholic school, Notre Dame, and I think Mercy Miller, who is Master P's son, and Caleb Foster, who now plays at Duke, they all played together, and they beat Bronny's team, I think, like, 3 or 4 times in 1 year. Like, and in all of those games that I saw and watched between those two teams, Bronny wasn't even the best player on the floor, right? So, we give all this attention to Bronny James. We got somebody like Mercy Miller who's, like, you guys don't know who that is. Go check him out. The kid is going to Houston. He's a senior this year. But Mercy Miller can absolutely play. I say that to say Bronny was never going to be a one and done. I look at his game, and we can talk about strength of his game. His strengths, he's a really – he's a really good shooter, right? Mm-hmm. He's
a solid defender as
He's a really solid defender.
I think – and see, that's the thing too. Like, he's not going to – go in and
drop 20.
Just have this extensive bag, and he's gonna get 25 30 a night.
No,
you know what I'm saying?
That's not him.
But I can see him in college being, at his best, at his peak, being maybe a 14, 15 point per game scorer, maybe get you 5 or 6 assists, really run your offense,
play defense,
be a knockdown shooter, play defense. You know what I'm saying? That's who I see him being, even at his peak. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because we've seen nothing in this game that just says to us, oh, we can isolate him on one side, and he's just going to get his shot off, or he's going to get it, you know what I'm saying, get downhill or come off a screen and, you know what I'm saying, get in his bag and get to the bucket. We've seen nothing in this game that will make us believe that he can do that, or that's who he is, and that's okay.
That's okay.
There is a space, there is a niche for who I project him to be, the type of player that I project him to be. there's a position for him. There's a niche for him in the league as well. That's okay. Like, everybody in the league, everybody doesn't just have to have this insane offensive bag. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Some people can just find something that they're good at and that they specialize in and make a career for themselves. And I think Bronny can do that. I think that's his lane. And I think for anyone who expects him to develop into this super high-level scorer, not saying that he can't, but I'm saying that hasn't what he's shown us.
The likelihood of him coming out and ever being this 20-25-point-per-game scorer, first, that's just not his game. He's very much... That's not his mentality. I mean, he's a good shooter, but he's not just heisting up threes and shots, right? Like, that's just not him. So, but once again, these granular expectations that as me and you, we watch and we can see, like, this kid isn't, he's not like a transcendent talent, but a lot of this hype and pressure, LeBron is getting mad at the media, but all of this hype and pressure was intensified, and it started, and it was, it's only been fueled by your comments. And that's my frustration. I feel like LeBron does that a lot in plenty of situations. I just think this situation, it kind of hits home because it's his son, right? It, you know, so I get the whole thing of, you know, you wanted to be a dad, and I'm sure LeBron James, in a world, I am sure he is a good dad. I am sure of it. But with you, like, you know how sometimes parents try to be a good parent, right? But I feel like in this type of situation, the more you outwardly talk about your kid publicly, it does more damage than actual benefit and helpfulness. It doesn't help. Because
it might have been a situation where he'd have been better suited telling his son that privately.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Giving him that motivation.
Right.
You know, privately.
Right. My mom, my parents always tell me is a time and place for everything. Mm-hmm. And I feel like with LeBron, I think he misspoke. I think a lot of times he misspoke. He may have said things that a day or two later, he think back and like, probably shouldn't have said that one, right? And I think sometimes he wants to take back his word and kind of walk back, but he can't. And this is what he has to deal with. But I'm glad that, you know, we actually have a dad on and you can actually speak from that perspective, wanting to be a good parent, right? But I think a lot of people riled up about LaVar Ball was kind of similar, where he put Lonzo under this unnecessary pressure when he threw out Steph Curry, right? Lonzo's better than Steph Curry, right? And it's like, I mean, Lonzo's pretty good, but I mean, he's not Steph Curry.
I'll never forget that opening night game. You can tell Pat Bev took all of that personal. Like, if there was a list of guys that he didn't want to see night one, first game in the NBA,
it was Pat Bev.
Pat Bev probably been on that list.
Pat Bev made
his life a living hell that first game.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, I mean, I'm glad we kind of see eye to eye on it. You giving LeBron a little bit of grace because of the dad aspect, which I'm not mad at. I just feel like LeBron says a lot of stuff, and I feel like at times he wants his cake and he wants to eat it too. And his words kind of just getting stuck in his mouth or whatever. But I think Bronny, I wish the best for Bronny, and ultimately,
I was just about to say that, man.
Go ahead.
All this being said, yeah, you know, wish the best for Bronny. You know, I wish for him to truly develop and to prove some of these haters wrong and get to the league and play with his dad if that's his desire. You know
right.
what I'm saying? And be a successful, profitable NBA player. I really do wish him the best. I think he can do it. I think he can.
I think he can too. I think with Bronny, I want to next year be huge because Boogie Ellis will be gone. Isaiah Collier would be gone, and this is his team. Granted, he had the cardiac arrest situation.
And that's another thing, right?
Yeah. He had that situation going.
I think he missed the majority of, like, the off-season and conditioning and stuff leading into the season.
So, he had a full off-season under his belt. He's already on campus. I feel like this is the best case scenario for Bronny, staying another year. I always thought he was at least 2 years on the good side, maybe three, 3 year college collegiate player. And yeah, so that's that. I'm hopefully the kid, gets through and can, put his head down and get better and develop. And for LeBron, stop talking.
Give him that encouragement privately.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to do it publicly because innately you're going to open him up to even more criticism.
Yeah. So let's stick with college basketball. Mm-hmm. Now that we've been talking about some college basketball, some college hoops, tell me, I want to get to Caitlin Clark because I feel like to talk about college basketball and to not talk about Caitlin Clark, it's just like, it's like you can't do it.
Yeah.
So, Ira, tell me, be honest with me. College basketball this year. Have you watched more women's games or more men's games this year? I'm asking.
This is what I'll say. Okay. I'm a basketball lover. Fanatic. Basketball is quite literally my first love, before girls, whatever advice I may have. Basketball is literally my first love. Here's what I will say. I have watched more women's college basketball this season than I ever have in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I
agree.
I think the majority, as far as college basketball, I think the biggest storylines this year are on the women's side, especially when you talk about Caitlin Clark and already breaking the women's record, but now I believe she's 18 points away from becoming the all-time leading scorer in all of college basketball, men's and women's. I think she'll pass Pete Maravich.
Yeah.
Just speaking on Caitlin Clark, man, she's phenomenal, and I'm gonna speak on her, and I'm gonna throw something at you.
Okay.
In a second.
Go ahead.
She's phenomenal,
man.
And I think we all see her and we see the range. You know what I'm saying? Immediately, she reminds us kind of Steph Curry. Where you literally have to pick her up in the backcourt. You know what I'm saying? She is a killer. She has a killer mentality. Like, she wants to eat your heart out. Extremely competitive, and what she is doing with that Iowa team where there really is a lack of talent is crazy. Like, the only reason they're really in games is because of her. They can't stop anybody.
Oh, man.
Like, their point of emphasis is to let her get her 30, 35. Hopefully, they can get to 90 points and hold you to 88.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what has impressed me with her, really watching her game this season, what has impressed me probably the most with her is that not only is she a willing passer, but she's a very capable passer. Now, she's had a couple triple-doubles this year. She's had multiple games with double-digit assists. And I think that's probably the thing that could take her even to the next stratosphere. Not just her scoring ability, not just her range, but she is a heck of a passer and playmaker. And she's doing this, like I said, on a team where there really isn't a ton of talent really around her. But she is legitimately elevating the play of her team through her play, through her passing, through her playmaking. I think that was Sunday. I watched her play a game, and they won. And she shot pretty badly. She shot maybe, she was like maybe 9 for 26 or something from the field. She didn't shoot well at all, but she still made her mark and had such a control on the game. She had a triple-double that game. I think she had about 12 assists, and then she ended up getting that last rebound in the fourth quarter. But that was a game where she controlled the game. She was clearly the best player on the floor, and it wasn't just because of her scoring prowess.
Right.
And I think moving forward for her and getting to the WNBA, I really think that that's what could kind of take her over the top, because there are a lot of women on a collegiate level and that we've seen that can score well, and in the WNBA that can score well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think her combination of scoring, her range, and her passing ability and being such a willing and capable passer, I think that that's what can really put her kind of a notch above some of the rest and really get into that special realm as far as women basketball players. But I wanted to ask you something while we're talking about her.
Go ahead.
And I want you to go ahead and you can kind of break down her game. I wasn't sure. Had you happened to hear the comment that Cheryl Swoops made about her and Angel Reese? It was kind of combined together. But did you hear those comments? And if you did, what were your thoughts on them?
I did hear Cheryl Swoops' comments. And I'm going to say, man, I think she will adapt. I'm a disagree slightly. Because the women's game, I feel like I watch her a lot. And she is she's not a small girl. She is such a smart basketball player. And even when, like, outside of the 3-point shooting, right? I see her, she can knock down the 3-ball from essentially anywhere once she passes half court. That's how she broke the record, the women's record.
A deep one,
right? I see the craftiness of her ability to get to the free throw line. I see the half spins, the fakes, in order to blow past her defender and get to the rim. Or not only getting to the rim and creating rim pressure, but then also, as you talked about, her playmaking ability. When the lane is clogged, she gets to the rim, passes her defender, the lane is clogged, she can find the open shot. She can find the open girl. And that's where I disagree a little bit. I think she will adapt easily. Granted, I know I would say the college level, they play like high-end. The high-end college, the women college basketball team, they play really good basketball. There's some good shot making. Very fundamentally sound.
Where they may lack in athleticism.
Yeah.
They make up for in fundamentals.
In skill, right? Like, I'm like, man, these girls are kind of like, they got more skill in game than what you think, right? Mm-hmm. I think she will definitely... there'd be an adjustment process. And I think overall that was Cheryl Swoops. That was her point. I think like overall that was the gist of her comment, that there's going to be an adjustment process and it's not going to just be all smooth sailing. She's going to come in right in the league and average 32 points a night. No, I don't think she would do that. Right. But I do think there has to be like an adjustment to her, like for her and coming, there be teams and defenses will have to adjust to her, right? So, like, you know, I find it really
that range, because
it's no one really doing that.
Been anyone in the WNBA, you know, with that sort of range, so that'd be an adjustment for players on the next level.
There's no one doing that at the WNBA level. And I know there's some girls that can really shoot it.
Yeah,
that have
Sabrina Ionescu with the Liberty.
Yeah.
The same. For those who are unfamiliar, that's the young lady who just competed against Stephen Curry in the 3-point contest at the All-Star game. Now, she can stroke it, but this chick, Caitlin Clark here out of Iowa, has a little more range. Consider Sabrina with a little more range.
A little bit more range. And so I always find it funny when people like, they got to adjust to this. Like, everybody like, man, you know, with the conference realignment, everybody like, man, it's going to take some time for Texas and OU to adjust. Okay, yeah, it may take them some time, but other people got to adjust to them too, right? So, like, with Caitlin Clark, yes, she's going to have to adjust to the WNBA, but the WNBA is going to also have to adjust to her because her game and her play style is very unique. She's going to be teamed up. She now, I don't know if you just saw, she just announced it today.
Yeah,
she
was going to forego her senior year and go to the WNBA.
I would presume that she is going to get drafted by the Indiana Fever, who have the number one pick, and Aaliyah Boston, who is already there. She's South Carolina, went to South Carolina, won a couple natties. She's a stud in her own right. That's gonna be a really good 1-2 punch.
It is, man. And I want to say, because there were a lot of people who were criticizing Cheryl Swoops, you know, and just saying outlandish things, you know. And although I may, first of all, when it comes to Angel Reese, I totally agree with her.
We get to Angel Reese. Yeah.
Spoke about Angel Reese, yeah. You know, offline. You know, wonderful individual. Wish her all the best. I just don't think she loves the game of basketball. You know, and I think her niche is more so, you know, being a hustle and grind player than necessarily just being this skilled. You know, she if you watch Angel Reese play, she's very, very raw. Her offensive game is extremely raw. You know, but when she buys in, the heart and the hustle is what makes her special.
Right.
Possibly make her special.
Right.
Not necessarily a skill, because right. She is very raw as a player. And so I agree with Cheryl Swoops when it comes to Angel Reese. I'm a little 50-50 about what she said when it comes to Caitlin Clark. But I did just want to say that for those that criticize Cheryl Swoops about her remarks, for those who may not know the legend that is Cheryl Swoops, if any woman in America is qualified enough to make those statements about those two women, it's Cheryl Swoops.
Yeah.
You're talking about a woman who led the NCAA women's basketball in scoring before, who won an NCAA title, who won 4 WNBA titles, who was, a 3-time WNBA MVP, a multiple-time WNBA Defensive Player of the Year. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're talking about a multi-time gold medal winner. We're talking about an extremely well-accomplished women's basketball player, one of the few women who can actually throw her name and throw her accolades in the debate for being the best women's basketball player of all time.
Facts.
That's how accomplished Cheryl Swoops is.
Yeah.
So for those who say, who is this chick? Or, you know, who is she to be? Pump the brakes now. Because yeah. Cheryl Swoops was that. We talking about a chick who played in the WNBA, had a baby, missed a year, came back, and was MVP.
Yeah.
Like, Google her. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Just Google her.
She can play. And we're going to get to Angel Reese. We can get to her. I guess we can get to her right now, LSU and so forth. I totally agree. We've been talking about this, you know, throughout the basketball season where, you know, LSU, there's been some leaps and bounds with them. You know, they started the season off kind of shaky with the Colorado loss. She had some absence for, you know, for whatever the reasons were. And Angel,
she denies it was for academic reasons.
Yeah, so yeah,
we
yeah.
Still don't know
we exactly yeah, why. We don't know exactly why, right? But Angel, she can play, right? She can play. I think, and I hate to be this guy, but I think a lot of the hype coming into, I think there's a lot untold about the hype that LSU had coming into this basketball season. First thing first was the national championship. Yep. I think the national championship, not I think, I know, because it's
Caitlin Clark and that Iowa team last year.
Yeah.
And the national championship.
Right. They beat them. And I think there was ultimately a lot of eyes glued to the Final Four and to that national championship game in particular, because the product that those young ladies put out last spring was phenomenal. It had a lot of people captivated. People that don't even watch basketball, women's basketball at that, were glued. First thing first is, I think a lot goes untold. LSU, and we know this in sports, we know this to be true in sports, Ivra, the best team doesn't always necessarily win at the end of the day. And I think LSU, not going to say they caught lightning in a bottle, but I would argue if they were were they truly the best team in college basketball? Because I think, to me, this is just my opinion, I think LSU obviously got to have some luck in terms of winning championships. You got to be good, but also some luck. And sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. And damn it, LSU was lucky that they didn't run into South Carolina last year. They actually should be...
South Carolina had already beaten them in the regular season.
Exactly.
And if I'm not mistaken, South Carolina was undefeated going into the Final Four. I might have to fact check that myself. I believe their only loss was to Iowa in the Final Four.
They ran up against the buzzsaw that we all know to be Caitlin Clark.
Yeah.
And she put on an absolute clinic. She lost her fucking mind. She went crazy. Right? So I would argue LSU got really fortunate not happening to see South Carolina again. Okay, Isaiah, you're doing this, that, blah, blah, blah. You're hating. Cool. Fast forward this year. LSU plays South Carolina in LSU. What happens? South Carolina wins. Right? Right? South Carolina wins. LSU has a stacked.
South Carolina, for those that don't know, is the number one team in the nation again this year. And they are the only team in both men's and women's basketball to still be undefeated.
Undefeated as we speak. So I think a lot of the LSU hype, they garnered a lot of attention because of the antics and Angel Reese obviously having a really good game. That entire team had a really good outing. So I don't want to discredit their championship. I'm just trying to add context of, hey, like, this thing, this whole LSU hype train, let's pipe it down a little bit. Because I think this year they've come with all of the great acquisitions that they have had this offseason, with picking up a player like Haley Van Lith, Anisha Monroe, the freshman.
I was just going to say.
Oh.
Michaela Williams
is absolute. Low-key, y'all, she's the best player on that team.
I was just going to say, you could argue that she may be the best or at least the most consistent player on that team.
On that team. So I think they've kind of come back down to earth. And with Angel, as you said, she gets a lot of... We even mentioned Flaw J. Shouts out to her. With Angel, though, a lot of her buckets are... They're hustle buckets, right? They're hustle buckets. They're, you know, she picks up a lot. She gets
offensive rebound.
And a lot of it is she just wants it more.
Exactly.
She just wants it more.
That is her niche.
Right.
She buys in, you know, or almost, like, crazy enough, I almost prefer for her to get the smack talking, or I almost prefer for someone to start talking.
Egg her on. It kind of fuse.
Oh, okay, yeah. Y'all know. Okay, she's going to give you all-out effort now. Now, she's going to be a menace to keep off the backboard. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I mean, to me, I know she has a crazy following on social media. Her social media presence,
a fairly public, you know, relationship.
Yeah,
you know,
with another collegiate athlete. Right. It's dominant, but, and we can talk about this. We can rank them up. We don't have to do all of that. But she's not like, she's not the best player in college basketball, y'all. She's nowhere near the best player in college basketball.
Oh, I mean.
We can run off names
easily. Off the top of my head, I can give you maybe four or five better players right now in women's college basketball.
Yeah,
you
know? Very easy. But that's just how, you know, that's just what it is. I think a lot of the LSU hype train it was fueled by the antics and some of the stuff that went down during the national championship game, and it had a lot of people riding with them. And it garnered a lot of attention this upcoming year. They're not a bad basketball team by any stretch of the imagination. They're going to be obviously in the tournament. And I expect them.
I still think they're probably still a Final Four team.
Yeah, yeah, me too. I mean, I still think, I still expect them to be at least in the Elite Eight, Final Four. Yeah. You know, that's my expectation. But I just want people to actually level some of the expectations and actually get a grasp of, oh, like, this is who Angel Reese is as a player. Granted, like I said, she has other outlets and so forth, and that makes her a big, huge megastar. So you said we watched a lot of women's college basketball this year. How do you feel about the men's side of things? And I want to pose this question to you, Ivory, because I know some of this is being sparked because on the college football side, obviously we know this year, this upcoming college football season will start the 12-team playoff, and basically they have expanded the playoff. Now there's talks of expanding the playoff, the college football playoff, even more to 14 to possibly 16 teams, which I think is crazy, but that's a whole nother conversation for a whole nother day.
Just let everybody.
Just way belittle the regular season, right?
They're gonna mess around and play 17 games like
that. The route they going. Yeah. Tell me how you feel about the possible, those conversations have been had, and it's seeped into college basketball. How do you feel about college basketball potentially having an expanded tournament? Because as we know, college basketball, at least for the men's side, it's turned into like, okay, we're watching March, right? We don't like, the regular season has kind of been
really
diminished.
Everyone is trying to get to March. So I think, and there's been talk of expansion with the men's NCAA tournament. And I think the number that I heard was like 96.
Yes.
Now,
because that's what, 64 already?
Yeah, 64. I guess technically 68.
68.
They have the play-in game.
Yeah.
Crazy game, whatever. So the number that I heard was 96, and I think that's absolutely absurd. We can't just let everybody play for a title, man. Like some teams, I think you're wasting time, you're wasting effort,
yeah.
You're wasting money. And let's be serious, there aren't 68 teams that could possibly win a title. Surely there isn't 96 teams that could possibly win a title.
Right.
Just like in college football, there aren't 16 teams every year that you say could possibly win a title.
That's
you
know a that yeah, no. Yeah.
And I just think it's a waste of time. It's a waste of money. It's a waste of resources. I understand why. I think they want to take advantage of the madness that is March Madness. You know, college basketball. They would like to extend it. They like to get more money out of that, more viewers, more sponsors, and whatnot. But I just don't think that. I think it's a waste of time. I think you stick with the 64, even with the 68. I can do the 68 because every year since they started, there's been a team out of that first four that's made it at least to like the Elite Eight or something like that.
Yeah, so yeah.
I can even see that, but I think 96 is a waste of time, especially for those teams who genuinely do have championship aspirations. And there's a few, a couple of the same names from last year that really have a chance. I think UConn,
yeah.
Who I think they finally dropped in the polls this week.
They did, but, yeah.
I think UConn.
Didn't they have a? They just had a heartbreaking loss. I'm blank.
I think it was.
Yeah. Okay.
I believe it was Creighton.
Yeah.
Creighton finally beat them. They have a really, really, really good chance of repeating, going back to back, and then there's Houston, who's right behind them. I always love Houston's teams.
The defensive intensity.
Yeah, very well coached. Calvin Sampson always has them good to go. If you don't know nothing else, you know they're, as they say, bring your lunch pail. Because when you play them, it's going to be a tough, you know, physical game. Couple of the blue bloods that we're used to, and specifically speaking to North Carolina and to Kentucky, I can possibly see both of those teams making the Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
They're talented enough.
They are.
I think for Kentucky, I think they're another team that can score with the best of them because they got a ton of talent. They probably have, I'd say they have right now at least two first rounders. One in Ben Shepherd.
Reed Shepherd.
And then the other one in Rob Dillingham,
yeah,
who you and I have talked about, and I must say he's starting to win me over. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, yeah.
They have, you know, a couple first rounders. I think the thing for them would be defensively. You know, when they get to the tournament, can they string together enough stops? And then, you know, North Carolina, I think that they're just. I really like North Carolina because they. I think their two best players are their two upperclassmen in RJ Davis and Armando Bacot. And I think it's really important to have that sort of leadership heading into the tournament. And so I think that they can be a really dangerous team because, you know, I think Bacot's a fourth, fifth year senior, something like that. Mm-hmm. I think this is RJ Davis, maybe his third season or so. He's their leading scorer. So I really think they are a really, really dangerous team in the tournament.
Yeah. To your point, I think it's absolutely absurd. And you know me, Ira, I'm a huge college football lover. So I'm not mad with the 12-team format. Cool. I mean, if you ask me, I think by the middle of all of this, the 12-team thing not going to satisfy people because you know what's going to happen? There's going to be four SEC teams. There's going to be three, four Big Ten teams, and everybody else just going to, you know, get in where they can fit in.
Not to cut you off, but the SEC and the Big Ten are going to just take over college football. it's getting to the point almost to where it should just be like them and then the rest of college football, like crazy enough.
Yeah.
I think legitimately, I think, over the next 10 years or so, your national champions are going to be SEC or Big Ten. And I'm not even exaggerating. Over the next 10 years, I think your national champion is going to come.
I don't think that's a reach. I don't think that's a reach at all. I mean, hell, look at the last 10 national championships. Look at the last 10. I mean, the last 10 are virtually either SEC teams or Big Ten teams, and then you got, you know, Clemson, you know, sprinkle Clemson in there. But, you know, hell, Florida State, you wake up tomorrow morning, they might be leaving the ACC. You know what I mean? So, that's like I said, that's a whole nother, we can have a whole goddamn episode, whole nother show. I think you're right, though, about the 96 teams tournament. Just seems just too much. And with college basketball, I remember watching, I was a little bit younger, but I remember watching the third, they used to have a really good 30 for 30 documentary on the Big East and the college basketball. And I know there's a lot of people like yourself. I just know a lot of, older people, or people that's like older than me, that can romanticize about the good old days of college basketball. And the regular season probably won't mean much like it used to, right? It just won't, because the sport has become, the sport has just been, it's been dumbed down to March. Like, everybody waits until March. Like, if you're a rapid college basketball lover, yes, obviously. Like, there's going to always be that percentage, that population. But I think the vast majority of people, they're going to be doing brackets. They're going to be trying to figure out, who should I do this? I'm going to have people calling me, ask me, hey, who should I fill out with, like, you know, right? Because they know you're an avid college basketball fan, fanatic. And I just don't want to see the sport. Granted, like I said, the regular season is already, it's already been diminished, but I don't want to see the sport go through further reconstruction with the tournament. I like the tournament as it is. It's filled with excitement. A lot of money is made. Like you said, Ira, there aren't possibly 96 teams. There ain't even 64 teams in.
You know, they want that possibility of the upset. You know what I'm saying? Because the thrill, the excitement of, you know, a 16 or a what would a seed be then? Like a 20 or something? Like, I don't
a 22 seed
would be, you know what I'm saying?
It would be
22 beating a 1.
Granted, it happens, right? It happens.
We had a 16 beat a 1 for the second time last season.
Yeah, but that 16 seed that may beat that 1-seeded team, they're not gonna just continue to go to the tournament and win games and get to the. It just doesn't happen like that, right?
It's only a 6. Just think about this. A 16 has only beaten a 2 twice in the entire history of the NCAA tournament. Granted, both times have happened in the past, you know, 6 or 7 years or so, but it's only happened twice in the history of the NCAA tournament. And both times, said team went out there the next game and lost.
Right. I was going to also mention, you mentioned Kentucky, and we've been kind of going back and forth with Rob Dillingham as well. All right, I got to tell you, man. The kid can.
He's really starting to.
The kid can play.
Critical of him at first, man, but he's really starting to win me over, man.
I mean, with this upcoming, I don't, Ira, and maybe you can help me out, because I just recently saw a mock draft for this upcoming year's draft. I have no idea who these players are. And Ira, I follow sports.
It's a heavy overseas influence. I think there's a possibility that four of the top five picks may be guys that haven't played a lick of college basketball. You got a couple. You got the kid Alexander Sarr. There's another. I'm gonna mess his name up, but another Jokic kid with the name Jokic. You got the kid Ron Holland from the.
I know him.
From the NBA Ignite team.
Okay.
Mattis Buzelis.
I know him.
Ignite team.
Okay.
So I mean, you really got the top four or five guys, maybe guys that haven't played a lick of college basketball.
And
I'm really not too thrilled about this year's draft.
Me either.
I don't really see a ton of franchise guys in this year's draft. Now, who knows? It may surprise me. It may get to the league. But I'm really not too thrilled about this year's draft. But
I was going to say, with Dillingham,
with
the draft kind of being, I would say, lackluster, he's kind of made a case for to be a top 10 pick, dare I say?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, he's been balling, man. He can play. I think his game is really fun to watch, you know.
I'm trying to, And you know, when I watch him,
mm-hmm.
I sit back and I try to think of a comparison. Like, I try to think who I would compare him to, because he's not a point guard.
He's not.
He's a guy who, let me say what I think he does, you know, better than most. When he gets it going, look out. Like,
he's a microwave.
He exactly. Like, this kid can score in bunches.
Yeah.
He's a tough shot maker. He's a really good shot creator. He's better than people think at, you know, getting to and finishing around the bucket. He's a very confident kid, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And I think that might be one of his cons, is that sometimes he's
too confident.
Overly confident.
Yeah.
And so he will take a few questionable shots.
Heat checks.
He'll take some heat checks. He'll take a heat check, but my God, man, when he gets it, it's nothing for him. In a 5-minute stretch, he could run off 12 straight in a 5-minute stretch. You know what I'm saying? Like, and he's really, really winning me over, man. Like, he's a big shot taker. He's a big shot maker. He's not afraid of the moment.
It seems like him and Reed Shepherd, they're Kentucky's go-to guys.
They are.
Like, they're the go-to guys. You know, I saw Reed Shepherd. He had the game-winning shot the other night on the floater. Mm-hmm. And ironically,
the game before, they had lost.
Yeah.
After a tip-in against LSU.
Mm-hmm.
In that game over in the corner to put them up one,
right?
Before they eventually lost on a putback to LSU,
right? So as you said, I'm excited to watch Kentucky to see what they do. They got a lot of guys that I kind of watch in high school, so you know, it's gonna be interesting to see them in the tournament. Like you said, they can score with the best of many. They got a lot of shot makers. Scoring is not the issue. It's can they generate enough stops consistently to beat teams, right? So yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
We shall see with them. I'm sure John Calipari will have them more than ready to go, man. But yeah, a couple names for those that haven't got into any college basketball yet. A couple names from Kentucky that you'll see in the tournament, and moving forward, you'll probably hear their names early on draft night this summer. Like you said, Reed Shepherd, and then this kid Rob Dillingham. Both will probably be first rounders. Rob Dillingham, you'll probably hear his name come pretty early off the board, maybe top 7-8 pick.
Agree. And I like Reed Shepherd's game. I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah, great shooter. The rest of his game is really starting to develop and pick up to his shooting now, because I think early in the season he was really just kind of a shooter.
Catch and shoot.
Late, you're starting to see him really put the ball on the floor. Like you said, had the game winner the other night. Really starting to develop his game.
Okay, so we're going to take a shift to the NBA.